Hello, Morris.
Yes, hello.
Ah, okay. Good afternoon. You're listening to Resonance 104.4 FM. This is Wavelength with William English, and I'm talking to Captain Maurice Seddon at home in Datchet. Is that right?
That's absolutely right, yes.
Okay. Well, how are you today?
Well as expected in an old wreck, you know. But I've had an awful disaster just now. I was in a hurry to take your call, and I spilt onto the floor and onto my shoes about 400cc of very good German apple juice, which made a terrible mess, but never mind. Those things happen.
Right. Okay. So you've spilt this onto your feet?
Sorry?
You've spilt it onto your feet?
I still have my feet. Oh, my feet are quite unscathed. It's merely that the shoes are covered with the apple juice.
Yeah.
My leather gaiters are also somewhat apple juicy. And, of course, the floor is deluged because it was 0.4 of a litre.
Right, yeah. Now, okay. Now, you apparently went to the hospital this morning, didn't you?
I did indeed, yes.
How did you get on?
Well, it was long and tedious and rather complicated, but it was a pre-assessment to determine whether I'm in a suitable condition of health to be able to undertake a surgical operation for prostate gland enlargement.
Yeah.
And for the life of me, I couldn't make out when the thing ended. What they had decided, I still don't quite know. But it looks very much as though they are going to go ahead with the operation.
Oh, right. Yeah.
We've got a terrible crackly line. Do you notice it?
No, it's fine at this end.
It is, I see.
Yeah.
Not all the time, but some of the time.
Yeah, no, I can hear you well.
Oh, thank goodness it has stopped crackling now.
Okay. Okay, so what's the problem with your prostate gland?
Well, you see, I understand that 90% of all men over 70 have trouble with prostate gland enlargement. The prostate gland, I know very little about it. It surrounds the urethra, if that's the right word for it, which passes the urine into the penis. And when one gets to a certain age, this gland expands, and the tube through it, the urethra, becomes very under pressure, so that when one urinates, instead of being able to urinate fully and properly, one can only urinate a small proportion of the volume that ought to come. And, of course, that therefore means that after a very short time, one has to urinate again.
Mm-hmm.
And this is absolutely maddening. It goes on and on. Sometimes it's after 20 minutes after the previous one, sometimes half an hour, sometimes three quarters of an hour, sometimes an hour. But inevitably, I mean, every night I have to get up roughly once an hour.
Really? Oh, yeah. How long has this been going on?
Well, it's been getting gradually more troublesome over the last, I suppose, 3 years.
Yeah.
And it's now got to the stage where it's a real nuisance. And so I'm inclined to go ahead with it. Though it must be said, as I understand it, there is a certain risk of my succumbing to the anaesthetic, and that would be the end of me.
Oh, really? Oh, right.
So I hope they've made the right conclusion.
Yeah. And you can choose, can you? You can choose whether or not to have this operation.
I'm sorry?
You can choose whether or not to go ahead with it.
Oh, I think I can do that, yes.
Yeah.
On the whole, I'm inclined to risk it, I think.
Yeah.
Because it's such a dreadful nuisance.
Yes. But I think you're sleeping quite a lot at the moment, aren't you? Don't you spend most of the day in bed? Or
spend most days in bed.
Yeah.
In a series of periods, as it were. And quite what that is due to, I can't tell you. I don't know. Presumably, it's in general part of the problem of old age, quite simply, I suppose.
Yeah.
And I'm told that one must not try and resist that. One must allow it to happen quite naturally and not overstrain oneself.
Yeah.
So I comply with that.
Right.
And when you rang just now, I was in fact sound asleep.
Oh, really? Yeah.
That was just a little bit before, you know, perhaps 10 minutes to three or something like that.
Yeah. And what do you do when you're in bed all day? I mean, are you listening to the radio or something? Or?
Well, oddly enough, there is no problem. because in most instances, when I go to the bed, there's an immediate automatic reaction, which is that I at once go to sleep. So that solves itself.
Right.
On other occasions, it's very rare for me to go to the bed and rest and not sleep.
Yes.
However, it does happen sometimes.
Yeah.
And in that case, of course, I listen to the wireless quite a lot. And in my personal experience, my most favoured wireless broadcasting station is that one called LBC.
Oh, yeah.
All the others, it broadcasts a great deal of trash. But amongst the trash, there are numerous nuggets of excellence, which you don't get in most other stations, I find.
Right.
So, okay. That informs me what's going on in the world around me.
Yeah. And you're taking warfarin as well, I think, aren't you, for a thrombosis?
Sadly, by reason of the thrombosis and in an attempt to stave off a repetition of that dreadful experience, I do have to take warfarin. And what is more, I have to go for INR, I've forgotten what that stands for, blood testing. Sometimes once a week, sometimes once a fortnight, sometimes once a month, depending how it's behaving, in order to assess whether I should continue with the existing dosage or whether the dosage needs to be increased or decreased.
Hmm.
Now, an example is that I went there 2 days ago, and it turns out that I'm not taking enough warfarin, I've got to take more, and so it's gone up from 3.5 micrograms or milligrams or whatever it is, to 4.
Right. Yeah. Hello?
Hello, yes.
Oh, sorry. Okay. And tell me about your... how are you managing to feed yourself at the moment, then?
My homemade...
How are you feeding yourself these days?
I'm keeping myself.
Feeding. Food.
What?
Food.
Oh, food.
Yes.
Myself. Well, you will be horrified to hear it. First of all, my teeth are in a terrible state, so that biting is nearly... chewing is an impossibility. So, very fortunately, I have a 50-year-old German Braun multi-mix and whatnot accessories for it. It's a sort of high-speed liquidizer, I suppose you could call it.
Mm-hmm.
Mixer liquidizer. And I liquidize almost everything. For example, ginger nut biscuits get liquidized in it. Literally anything.
Yeah.
And I eat, I'm sorry to say, a very great deal of tinned food.
Yeah.
Because that saves the cooking. And I'm not a good cook. And so the tinned food, whatever it may be, regardless, is put in this machine and switched on, and a little water added to make it more fluid. And this is then liquidized thoroughly.
Yes.
It's maintained warm in a special... ancient slow cooker, and I can go to it and have a little feed at any kind of time of day.
Yeah.
So I have not normal meals at all. I have little tiny feeds.
Yes.
From this extraordinary collection of stuff.
Yeah.
And it feeds me quite well, I think.
Yeah.
I use a lot of vitamins and that sort of thing as well, of course.
But do you virtually blend just almost anything, won't you? Is there anything you wouldn't put in the blender?
Only those things that literally cannot be reduced.
Such as?
Can be reduced.
Yeah.
Into liquid or semi-liquid form goes in.
Yeah.
And that means I can put it in my mouth, taste it, but then I can swallow it without needing to chew.
Yes. But would you just sort of... Do you discriminate about what you put together? I mean, would you just put meat and vegetables and biscuits and everything in the same mixture?
Just one idea. I'm sad to say it's mostly tinned things, simply because I don't have to cook them.
Right.
Now, for instance, I can get tins of Scotch broth soup from any one of about, 4 different supermarket manufacturers.
Yeah.
One comes, I think, from Asda. Another one comes from Cross and Blackwell. A third one comes from, I can't even remember. various of the well-known supermarkets.
Yeah.
And also I take tinned soups, such as vegetable soup or thick vegetable soup or, oh my God, I've just forgotten what they all are. But all sorts of soups go into it. But I never take them in the size they already are. I put them in and reduce them anyway.
Yeah.
So that they all get to a standard consistency of being literally, well, my particular grain size, if you like to put it in those terms.
Yeah. But I know in the past, if I've been to a restaurant with you, you will always ask for a doggy bag, won't you?
Oh, yes. Well, that's for several reasons. First of all, I call it the doggy bag, but it covers a multitude of sins. The main reason there is that I abominate waste. And so when the meal is ended, we all have a certain amount that we haven't eaten. And you and Sandra and I put all our remnants in one container, and that is taken away. And that material, in a very large proportion, is perfectly edible. It's merely stuff that we have not wanted. We didn't have the appetite to eat them, or perhaps it was just too much for us, or something of that sort.
Yeah.
Now, sometimes the whole lot goes to the dogs, who love it, and sometimes a part of it goes to me, and a part goes to the dogs. So that is the doggy bag affair.
Yeah. But again, you would think you would sort of just blend sort of salad with meat and almost anything else, really.
Yes, it goes into it, certainly.
Yeah.
Indeed, that's one of the main thing that goes into, because I don't have to chew that.
Right, right. Now, I wanted to get on to this topic of, I think you were telling Sandra about some system you have for walking on ice with some sort of...
Oh, yes.
Improvised shoe covering.
All my life long, and very recently is no exception, I have found that after snow has fallen, if it's cold and it freezes, that forms a sheet of ice. And in certain other conditions also you get sheets of ice in the winter. And one skids on this and falls over, and can kill people by cracking their skulls, and it can injure them very badly with broken legs and so on and so forth. I have never hitherto known of any prevention of these problems. It's just an ongoing problem. Well then, because I listen to the wireless a lot, I heard, not on one occasion, but on several occasions, and in the nature of things, most of these occasions were listening to LBC again. sorry, what an awful cough. They all said, and there were about three or four or five of these people, quite independent people who called in to the wireless station, and they all mentioned the concept of wrapping round one's shoes. Of putting putting socks or stockings over one's shoes.
Yeah.
And that this prevented the slipping altogether. So I thought, well, I'm going to try this. Well, of course, the first thing was, where on earth does one get a stocking or sock which is big enough to put over a shoe, I ask you? It's an impossibility. However, I was very fortunate. You gave me some lovely pullovers, which I cherish and would never dream of damaging in any way. I preserve them greatly and esteem them. But I also have some older pullovers, which are made, in this particular case, of acrylic. Acrylic, by the way, is the same thing, I think I'm right in saying, as Perspex, but, of course, in fibre form. And I chopped the full length of the sleeves off the acrylic pullover, and I found that that fitted perfectly over my shoes. And I was able to go out into the garden, where there was a great deal of this icy material, and not once did I slip. Not once. The effect was almost too good. It was so good that in order to lift one's foot off the ground, one had to exert a certain pull, because the foot actually clings to the ice at the place where you've been standing.
Oh, yeah.
Quite extraordinary. Anyway, that works perfectly, works brilliantly, and I recommend it highly to anybody who hasn't already tried it. It seems to work on the principle that you're presenting a sort of grid that you're standing on, which probably gives a higher pressure per square inch due to one's weight than it would be the case if it was directly on the snow. And this grid effect has a sort of clamping action, which clamps the foot onto the ground, and you have to exert a certain pressure to lift it. It's not very difficult, but you're conscious of actually exerting a force to lift the foot.
Yeah.
Well, no advantage without disadvantage. This has very serious disadvantages in other directions. First, I'm looking at a pair of these sleeves now, hanging on the line above me. The first thing is that they absorb a great deal of water-based snow and ice,
yeah,
which then drips out wherever you go in the house.
Right.
So the house becomes a sort of semi-quagmire of this stuff. That's, I think, the main problem. Another problem is that if you want to dry them, if you've finished with them for a while until the next epoch of ice and snow comes along, how are you going to dry them? Well, you'd normally dry them by hanging them on a line.
Yeah.
Well, if you do that, in my case, the line is in the bathroom, and the things drip, 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 drip onto the floor of the bathroom, with consequences that you can imagine.
Yes.
And so on. But it is a wonderful thing, which completely prevents the accident. I esteem it highly, and I'm so glad that I heard it.
All right. And you also wear these sort of leather... what do you call those leather things that you wear up to your knee?
Well, they're a form of old-fashioned gaiters.
Oh, yes.
A sort of rural or rustic gaiters.
Yeah.
First, it must be said that I suffered a terrible thrombosis, as you know,
yeah,
of which I nearly died about 5 years ago. That has left my legs in a devastated condition. They are black and blue and every kind of wrong colour, and they are pitted with what are called something or other ulcers. I can't remember the adjectival description.
Yeah.
Would that description be? No, I don't know. I can't get it. Oh, wait a minute. What does one call those superficial veins which stand out?
Oh, varicose veins.
Thank you. Varicose ulcers form. And these are a permanency. They are incurable, as is all the deformity and the discoloration of the legs. So they look absolutely appalling from the knee down. And it's important to protect them, because they're then, in their present state, they're much more liable to suffer injury than they would be if they were in their normal, undamaged condition. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
So the leather gaiter is ideal. Also, my many dogs rush up and down my legs, seeking to be petted and stroked and talked to and all the rest of it, and they would scratch holes in the already damaged legs. So it's a general good protector.
Yeah, yeah. Speaking of dogs, how are you getting on with your neighbour and the dogs?
Oh, my dear. Well, that is a never-ending horror. He's continuing constantly. May I say his name or not?
That's up to you, I think.
Well, do you know, is it considered wise or unwise?
It's probably unwise. I would sort of leave him unnamed.
What?
I think it's unwise to name him.
Yes, I think I then won't make it. I have a neighbour who is quite ghastly. As you know, I'm a retired regular officer of the Royal Corps of Signals. Now, there are a certain number of soldiers, not officers, soldiers, who, for no apparent reason, they have what we call in German die haben ein Vogel im Kopf. They have a bird in their head. or in English, you might say they have a bee in their bonnet.
Oh, right, yeah.
And this bee in the bonnet takes the form of a sort of declaration of war on the officer class collectively,
oh, right.
Regardlessly of whether they're currently serving officers or whether they're retired.
Mm.
Just because they are officers, they are in for it in a big way. Well, this neighbour of mine is exactly like that. And he's at me the whole time, constantly writing letters of complaint and taking photographs of things and telling the council about it and practically taking the matter to the law court. It does, in fact, it has been in the law courts, in many law courts, and there is no solution to it because, you see, theoretically he's quite right. The dogs do bark, and barking is a nuisance, there's no doubt about it. But what one has to consider is the background to all this. Why are there so many dogs? Why is it necessary to have them barking? And that brings in the fact that the whole situation here with the police and the local council, and here I am going to name it, it's the Royal Borough of Windsor and Maidenhead, no less.
Mm-hmm.
The police, over 51 years that I've lived here, and hundreds of reports by me of the terrible behaviour of what the local people call didi-coys towards me, bearing in mind that I am half Hanoverian German, and bear in mind what that ghastly creature Hitler did to the gypsies. Anyhow, with all that, these people have had it in for me ever since I've been here, and that's 51 years. I've told the police about it on countless occasions, and they have not made one single arrest. They have not made one single charge against any individual in connection with any of the countless attacks on me and my person and my property. But they're not the only ones who are at fault. If I understand correctly, the policy of the police is determined and dictated by the local council, which I say again is the Royal Borough of Windsor and Maidenhead.
Mm-hmm.
And although I've complained to them on countless occasions that the police have done nothing, they, the council, have done absolutely nothing to make the police carry out their proper duties.
Mm-hmm.
So what's right. One thing and another, I have to fall back on my own resources, which are very slender and very poor, and the only solution that I have found that I can afford and that works reasonably well is to have dogs, and not merely dogs, but very many dogs, and that I have.
So how many do you have at the moment?
Oh, I'm afraid for diplomatic reasons, I don't divulge the total number.
All right.
I said to say that if it were a normal household in normal situation, the number of dogs I have would then be considered to be quite excessive.
Yes.
But having regard to the terrible conditions that I have, namely that almost every night there is what I call a would-be incursion.
Mm-hmm.
In view of that, the number of dogs I have is no longer excessive.
Right. Okay, Morris. I think we're going to wind it up there. If I can get the CD to figure it out. Yes, there we go. All right. Thank you very much for talking to us today.
Not at all.
And we hope to see you on Sunday.
On Sunday, yes.
Yep.
That'll be very nice to see you. Thank you very much.
Okay, Morris.
And let me know how the broadcast goes.
Yep.
I hope it'll entertain and interest people.
All right. Thank you. Good luck. Bye.
Bye.